Are you listening to us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or any other platform where you can leave a rate or review? Do you like what we're doing? If the answer to all of that is yes, please consider quickly giving us a 5-star rate. And if you wouldn't mind leaving us a nice review, we greatly appreciate that as well. Okay, let's do this.
Hello, welcome to the Ghost of Harrenhal. My name is Simon.
And I'm McKelly.
Thank you for joining us for episode 169 of our chapter-by-chapter book review of The Song of Ice and Fire by George Martin. Today, we'll be discussing chapter 25 of A Storm of Swords, that's Davos 3.
And we got an email from a listener today that started off, "Hi, McKelly and Simon," and then it said, I just wanted to put it that way because I always hear it the other way around.
Yeah, I feel bad because, I mean, I feel like you're the brain, you know, you're the real driving force behind this. And
not
I do get sort of
not
top
true.
Billing. Even alphabetically, you should go first.
Anyway, we're going to chat about the chapter and try not to spoil any future plot points for you. And hopefully we're going to provide you some entertainment along the way.
We'll summarize what happened, discuss our thoughts on it, provide some useful background, compare it to the television show, indulge in a little pedantry, and cover some relevant news and listener correspondence. Be sure to check out the show notes. They'll provide some additional information about the characters and geography of this chapter. Be particularly handy if you're not reading along. How are you, sir?
I am doing just fine. You know, it would be funny if one episode we just threw everyone for a loop, and I started, "Hello, welcome to the Ghost of Harrenhal. My name's McKelly."
Didn't we do it, like, for the 50th or something?
Yes, I think we did.
Yeah, it
was
and it threw me, I remember.
The 1 year.
Yeah, I was confused when we did it. I think I got my name wrong, if I remember.
You're like, "Did I, McKelly? Wait a second. Wait. No, that's not right." I'm doing well. I think I've finally gotten all the Christmas decorations up. And Stacy took the dog for a walk while I was getting ready to come down here and record. And I have the upper half of my yard, the part near the street, is set to music. And, you know, the lights blink and stuff to the music. And she came back in and goes, "I don't like the blinking lights and music." And I was like, "Okay, I'll take all that out then. Just make it stagnant. It'll just stare at people now."
Ouch.
I know, right? That's okay. I do it for the kids, really. Not my kids. They don't give a crap. I do it for the neighborhood kids.
Do you,
not
McKelly?
For her.
You see, the thing is, I think there's an audience of one for your overdoing it at Christmas.
Just do it for me. But we haven't really, we haven't talked a whole lot in almost 2 weeks.
That is true of everybody in my life. I have been watching the World Cup.
True. Yes.
Nothing else. So I've got very little to say.
Yes.
And let me say, I do feel a little bit icky about watching the World Cup because FIFA are monsters.
I think you mentioned that before. Yes.
I am enjoying it.
Well, it's been a busy week in my life, and you've missed most of it. You've missed Molly's car getting towed. I didn't tell you about that, I don't believe. I just got it back today. It cost me a small fortune in repair costs, as that car is wont to do. And probably the biggest news, second biggest news, I'll tell you the biggest news last. The second biggest news, I broke down and did something I never thought I would do. I got an iPhone.
Oh, you did?
I did, yes.
That's interesting.
I caved, just like it took me 14 years. To cave into getting a dog, I finally caved into the family pressure and got an iPhone so that they can FaceTime me and I don't make the pictures blurry and stuff.
I'm never going to do it. My family have iPhones and I'm never going to do it because unlike them, I have more sense than money.
Oh, I can't wait to complain. It came in yesterday, and I still haven't started to set it up because I keep coming up with excuses as to why I'm not set it up yet. But really, I'm just kind of scared. Kind of scared to do it. I don't really want to, and I can't wait to start complaining about how inferior it is to my Samsung.
Oh, yeah. You know when the keyboard comes up and it doesn't have any numbers on it, and you have to go to a different screen to click numbers, you're going to be annoyed then.
Oh, when I run out of space on my phone, I've got limitless space on my Samsung. Anyway,
when you pay for an app that's three times the price it was.
I'm going to be annoyed.
Going to be annoyed with that too. So Carson is actually, she's on the opposite journey because, you know, remember she lost her iPhone.
Oh, I do. Yes.
There was still like a faint, now pretty much extinguished hope that she would get it back. But she got our provider to move her number to a spare Android phone that we had lying around. So for the last month and a half, she's been using an Android phone.
Uh-huh.
And she's actually seen some of the advantages.
Uh-huh.
This is just a cheap phone. It's not a special phone, but she's like...
Right. Yes.
So there's just a chance. I don't believe it because she still complains bitterly. I'm just hopeful that she might come over to the bright side.
Yes, and I've gone to the dark side. We've swapped places.
So this is the second biggest news. God, yes. Help me.
The Can biggest news myself? Happened today.
Go on.
We got, you and me, got Christmas cards.
Oh!
From one Jenny of Old Stones.
How nice.
Sent our Christmas cards in. Yours, they both came in one big envelope, and yours was marked. And a smaller envelope inside of the big envelope for you, and mine was marked for me. But yours wasn't closed, so I have looked at yours. I know what yours is. But I really like mine. It's the first card up on the board in the kitchen where the cards go. It is a weirwood tree with Christmas lights on it.
Oh, excellent.
It's fantastic.
We'll have to meet up so I can get a hold of my card.
Yes.
Face-to-face.
I will definitely have to do that, especially before Christmas, if possible.
Ideally.
Yes.
So, I have a little story, stemming, as they often do, from the family call.
Good. I have not heard this. I'll be hearing the first time, along with our listeners.
So, if you recall, I went to my brother's wedding, and I was official photographer, and I sent him the photographs. And then in the mail, from his new wife, Sophie, we got a letter from France, and it had a photograph in it, which of course I took. So it's kind of like, seems like a circuitous route to do this, but it was like a thank you. And it was a photograph of them with my family. So it was a nice photograph, and it was great.
Yeah.
But Carson noticed that the address, the return address that Sophie had written, was not quite the address that we have now. My brother has lived there for 10 years, more than that, 20 years. My parents were there for 12 years before that, so I thought I knew the address, but actually the address is slightly different from what I understood it to be.
Okay.
This got Carson very interested, so she went searching to see if this address was correct, and she found their website, but she found the French version of their website, so she asked Google to translate it into English.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And so she was kind of curious, because, you know, sometimes Google Translate can get things wrong. But she found a very interesting thing. As she went down the list of possible activities that you could do while staying at the farm, she saw horse riding, and she saw tennis, and she saw sin.
What?
Just the word sin. And she was like, I hope they book the whole place, not just one of the units.
I don't recall this option when we stayed there.
She brought this up to Rob, and we were all sort of like, you know, riffing on this, and we thought it was very funny. And we were like, Rob, what is it? And he was like, I don't know. He said, I don't know what the French word for sin is. Because obviously it had come from a French word, which meant something else, probably.
Right.
So while we were all talking and sort of riffing on this, he went off and he said, it's fishing. The French word for sin and fishing are essentially the same word. Which is such a strange thing to have the same word for.
It really is.
Later on, he was telling me about this trial he's been having about setting up the joint bank account for the two of them. And he was saying that he had to bring in all kinds of paperwork, including their new marriage license. And I said, to prove you weren't living in fishing.
I see what you did there, because it's almost the same word.
It's almost the same. So yes, we're delighted. We're delighted that the French website advertises sin as one of the things you can get up to.
Well, you know, you never know what happens behind locked doors, I guess. Well, this intro is almost running as long as the extended version of the sustainer cut that I made for the last
two weeks ago.
Yes, it was.
I had to go crack into it to listen to it, and it was very funny.
It was.
I'd forgotten how funny it was. I'd forgotten how amused you were. I mean, for me, it didn't seem that unusual of a flub.
You know, outtake part, yes.
The outtake part.
I left in the runaway car story.
You loved that runaway car
story.
I did.
I guess that's another perk of being a sustainer, is sometimes we do extended versions with long stories and outtakes left in.
Well, it's a perk, I suppose.
Right. Long, funny stories and funny outtakes.
So let's get down to business. How did we leave Davos Seaworth? Last we saw of Davos, he caught a ride from his little island in Blackwater Bay on a Lyseni ship, on which he learned that King Stannis was still alive. He was taken to his friend Salador San, where Davos discovered that his son's fates. Four had died on the Blackwater, but Devon was still alive and is on Dragonstone, still squire to the king. Davos tells San he plans to kill Melisandre and sets off for the castle to do so. Upon entering the castle, Davos is arrested for planning to kill Our Lady. McKelly, why don't we give the summary of this one?
Why don't we? Davos sits in his cell deep underneath Dragonstone. It's dank and dark, but at least it's not cold. It's said that the castle was built with the stones from hell, and Davos can see how that might be the case. When he first arrived, he thought his sickness would take him soon. However, Maester Pylos nursed him back to health, and now he's hale and hearty, receiving fairly high-quality food for one in his position.
It dawns on Davos that they're keeping him alive for some purpose. Remembering the fiery fate of Gunsa Sunglass doesn't do much to lift his spirits. His two jailers bring him a regimented supply of food, but they never respond to his questions. However, his loneliness comes to an end when Melisandre unexpectedly pays him a visit. She questions whether he needs anything. It's only his king and his son that he's lacking.
She asks if he believes her role is to keep the darkness at bay. He rebuffs the suggestion, pointing out that he saw what she birthed underneath Storm's End. Melisandre says a shadow can only be made by light, and that King Stannis' fires burn too low for her to draw any more from him. It might kill him. Davos, on the other hand, if he comes to her chamber one night, she'll give him pleasures like he's never known, and make...
a horror. That's what Davos tells Melisandre she'll make, and he has no interest. Davos asks the Seven to protect him from her and Relor. She points out the Seven didn't do much for Gunsa Sunglass, despite his praying. He burned all the same. She tells Davos to open his eyes and see the truth. There are opposites everywhere, constantly at war with each other. Love and hate, ice and fire, life and death. The war is waged by two, not seven, not 100, not any other number. The Lord of Light, Relor, versus the Lord of Darkness, the Great Other. That's why she's travelled across half the world to Dragonstone.
Davos asks who betrayed him to her, figuring it can only be Salador San. She says she saw his purpose in her flames. This lights a fire under Davos. How did they burn on the Blackwater if she can see the future? She gave Davos's son's ship and men to the fire. Melisandre explains that it wasn't her. If she'd been there, the outcome would have been different. But Stannis has learned his lesson now.
Melisandre tells Davos that Stannis is down, but he'll rise from these ashes. He's the Lord's chosen, Azor Ahai, born again. She saw the prophecy in her flames. She can see the doubt in Davos's eyes, and so leaves him to consider all that she's said.
3 days later, a man is tossed into the cell with Davos. It's the Hand of the King, Alistair Florent. He divulges the horrors of war he's faced thus far, having lost a chest of fancy clothes during the Battle of the Blackwater. Davos relates, mentioning that he lost four of his sons. Alistair thinks the war was also lost that day, adding that Stannis will never sit the Iron Throne. His fleet is gone, as are most of the lords who backed him.
Florence says he was only trying to salvage what's left with peace. It wasn't treason. He wrote a letter to Tywin Lannister offering terms for a peace. Stannis will give up his claim to the Iron Throne and retract his statements that Joffrey is the product of incest. In return, Stannis will be confirmed as Lord of Dragonstone and Storm's End. The deal will be sealed by a marriage between Shireen Baratheon and Tommen Lannister.
Davos can see the merits of the plan, mostly favoring the Lannisters, but he knows Stannis will never go for it. He'll never yield if he believes he's right, and never marry his daughter to a child of incest like Tommen. When Florence says the king has no choice, Davos responds that he does. Stannis can choose to die a king. Davos doesn't like the idea much more than Alistair does, but he's a king's man, so we'll support him to the end.
Yep.
So there seems to be a running theme with Davos chapters of him looking to be nearly dead.
Yes.
Only to rise from the ashes himself.
Yes. This was kind of like a continuation of the previous death, and he has a new one looming, of course.
Yes.
The reason they're fattening him up is just so he'll burn better.
Right. Just like you would a turkey before Thanksgiving. You'd want a scrawny turkey. Let's see, we've almost had a water death. Now we've almost had sickness. Now we've got possibly fire coming. So
he was saved last time by the Lyseni ship, this time by Maester Pylos. And Maester Pylos took over from Crescent, right? I mean,
yes.
Yeah.
He was kind of Crescent's assistant.
Apprentice, yeah.
Yeah. And then Crescent died, so.
Yes.
Yeah, but this time he's back to feeling pretty much like normal again. Well, a new normal anyway. I mean, he'll never be the previous normal after the loss of his sons, but physically he's feeling pretty healthy anyway, so
yeah.
That's something.
He tries to have some conversations with the guards, but they're not very talkative. In fact, zero talkative, basically. Tries to find out if the autumn storms have started in the narrow sea. Presumably he's concerned about the Red Wine fleet coming to finish them off.
Yeah, it's... I found that question to be, I would say, interesting, but I try not to use that word. because this is the first we've heard of such a phenomenon, that autumn storms possibly make the narrow sea not passable.
Well, we haven't had an autumn before.
Right, so. Yeah, so we've not heard of this. If that's the case, it could put a different a twist on Dany's timeline.
Because if she
chooses not to buy the Unsullied and take the land route, and these storms start, she could have trouble getting back to Pentos.
The thing about seasons is they're of weird length in this place, and autumn maybe only lasts a couple of months. I mean, maybe,
well, that's true. Yeah,
you know, maybe so. By the time she gets there.
Yeah, that's true.
I didn't imagine that autumn was going to be years long like summer was. I imagined it was going to be months rather than years. So it may
just
be
a little. Yeah,
the storms have blown through.
I was thinking of how long summer and winter can be, and that autumn might have a similar length. But yeah,
but I think this is the autumn here is just a transition between the two.
Right. Yeah.
So Davos correctly surmises that they don't plan on letting him die, at least not by illness or starvation. Obviously, he is concerned about Lord Sunglass and Lord Rampton's sons, is that right? Rampton?
Yep. Yeah.
They were all marched off to the fire.
I
gotta say, I would send the skinny dying man to the flames if I was
to waste the food.
I wouldn't keep him around. Clearly, it's interesting that Melisandre is his first visitor.
Right.
Because
he has
friends in Dragonstone. Primarily the king, which is very useful of all the friends you would want to have.
That would be the most useful, you would think.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, we haven't seen Stannis in a long time, but we got some news from Salador San about him, and that he was, and even Alistair Florent mentions here that he's always with the Red Woman, and that they spend all this time down in the deep in the dungeons by the volcano, and you just wonder how in touch he is with the things that are going on. I wondered, does he even know that Davos is down here, or is this all Melisandre and Selyse?
That's true. My first thought was it was Stannis that was protecting him, but that's a good point. Maybe Stannis doesn't even know he's there. But Melisandre's visit is interesting. I wonder. She spends a lot of time with Stannis, but Stannis is a bit of a downer, let's be honest. And obviously, according to her, he's depleted by the two shadow demons that he has helped to create.
Right.
And so he's probably even less good company than he's been. It did feel a little bit, this conversation, like she was looking for a confidant. She was looking for someone who she could unburden herself to, tell the truth of her, why she's there. I mean, she spoke some quite strong truths here. Things that she wouldn't want Stannis to hear. And she's telling them to the one person in Dragonstone who would tell everything to Stannis without hesitation.
Right, yeah. Yeah, and you know, maybe following your logic there, the fact that Davos is so truthful, even to his own detriment, is something she would find appealing. Because she's probably surrounded by a lot of yes people. People who are afraid of her. People who are in revere. You know, people who revere her. And she probably doesn't often come across someone who's going to shoot her straight and tell her
things
she doesn't want to hear.
That sort of fear and revere sort of like manifested itself as being just a thin veneer. I did got all poetic there. When those same people said they didn't want her at the Battle of the Blackwater, you know, so she was sidelined for what was the most important part of this. And she said, that's what caused it. I should have been there.
Yes.
I think probably you want to go dissect it a little bit more, but I think the one key line, the reason I say that it's dangerous for her to have said what she said to Davos, is that she said she wouldn't have come all this way to put another vain man on the Iron Throne.
On an empty throne, right.
That's something you wouldn't want Stannis Baratheon to do.
Unless you're implying that, because the reason she was saying it is because that Stannis is not your average guy. He is Azor Ahai reborn. So maybe she's saying, I wouldn't have just come put any old random vain guy on a throne.
I hear what you're saying. I took it more to mean that my being here and helping Stannis is just the tip of the iceberg of why I'm here. The real reason I'm here is for the war.
I agree.
So that does leave it. Does leave the first meaning of that another vain man. He's just another vain man. But I think with her there to guide him, she expects him to become Azor Ahai.
Okay, so he is still in transition to be the man she needs him to be to lead the light against the darkness. I guess is kind of what you're.
But also, I mean that. That he's a means to an end for her. I mean, it's a little bit confused because obviously, if he's Azor Ahai, then she's what's the point of her? I mean, Azor Ahai is the one who's going to have, you know, he's fabled, has powers that would make hers seem trivial.
Right. He's got Lightbringer, the sword.
Right. So you've got that. Then why do you need her?
Right.
Is she necessary to make... That's the question. Is she necessary to make it happen? To make the...
She must think she is.
It's the old Macbeth thing, you know? Sort of like the prophecy drives the narrative. It isn't just a prediction of what's to come. It's knowing the prophecy, you then act on the prophecy.
Yep. So Melisandre compares herself to the torch. There's only one torch down here in this dungeon. And at first when she arrives, she threatens to put it out. And Davos just says, no, please don't do that. And she says, oh, now you love the light. but then she compares herself to the torch and says that we're both tools of R'hllor made for the single purpose of keeping darkness at bay. And, you know, I took it to imply that she's trying to explain that like fire, she can protect, provide life, and keep safe, keep people, keep things safe. But on the flip side, she could also destroy and kill like fire can do, which later on when she talks about the war of opposites, that kind of goes against her idea of the war of fire and ice and darkness and light and everything is literally black and white, you know, like there's not a lot of gray.
No, explain what you mean. Why does that go against it?
Because
you're saying fire could be used for good or ill, but she's saying yes.
She's making it seem like everything is either for good or for evil. But fire is a great example, and she's talking about being like this torch, a tool of R'hllor that could be both good evil or good and bad. It depends on the hands it's in, I guess.
Yeah. Again, I'm constantly dismayed and puzzled by their use of burning people alive. Because so now you've got an alternative understanding of Melisande. She's not just some priestess of the law who sort of like tied herself to a guy she fancied in the hope that that would bring her power and influence in Westeros. She is, in fact, someone who's here on a noble quest to save the world from the Great Mother.
Yes.
Is the way to engender love and affection for your side to burn people who slightly disagree with you, who clearly aren't working for the Great Mother, but they just don't 100% agree with you straight off the bat?
It feels like that's
not great PR right there.
I agree. I had the same thought that she kind of sees herself as a religious warrior, waving the banner for good and light and life, and trying to wake basically like human zombies who are more worried about consuming and defeating each other than facing the true fight, which is of the two between R'hllor and the Great Other. But then, you know, she's burned multiple people alive, so that good in life really only goes so far.
Yeah, but it feels like she's in control of that.
Right.
She could just say, let's stop doing that. It's not helping the cause.
She could. She doesn't seem to be doing that, but you're right, she could.
Of course, Davos is a complete straight shooter, and several times he's got an opportunity to lie to Melisandre, and he fails to do so because he tells her the truth. She asks him, after she talks about the tour, she asks him if he believes, and he says no.
Right. Yeah. And then she goes through this thing about, you know, his heart being full of light or full of darkness, and he says, my heart's full of doubt. Right. And, you know, and she says she would have known whether he was lying or not, but man, he does not pull punches. That's for sure.
I mean, I think literally she had her hand on his heart when he said that, as if she was going to yank it out if he lied.
Right.
Davos just knows the right thing to say, thankfully. But,
I guess. I guess he just says what's in his heart, really. I mean, his heart's full of doubt, so he said it.
She does reveal that she does need some kind of contribution from a man to make the Shadow Baby. We're guessing it's what you might expect that contribution to be.
Based on her saying to him that she describes giving him pleasure such as he's never known.
Yeah, although she doesn't literally say that would make another baby, because he interrupts her.
Yes, she says it will make, and he says a horror.
Yeah, but she might have been about to finish that sentence with, you happy,
you know. I wondered if that was a legit offer, or possibly some kind of temptation test.
Yeah.
You know?
I also wonder, I mean, what's the temptation? He's alone in a dungeon, and a beautiful woman offers herself to you. It's possible he might succumb to that. What kind of test is that? What are you testing?
I guess to see how true his convictions really are. To see whether she can fully trust his convictions, or if he would waver at the first sign of temptation. At this point he's proven it, but...
Yeah. I also think that she... This goes to the fact that she might be lonely, you know, with Stannis sort of like in a funk.
Right.
Selyse being the kind of overly zealous convert that would even make the converter blanch a little bit at what they've done. Right. And then Florence clearly, you know, fearing her more than liking her. She probably is kind of personally lonely. And so maybe
could be.
This whole conversation, it just feels like I'm trying to make friends with you.
That is,
I mean, just I'd on
never
some level.
I thought about it that way, but as you mention it, I can see your points about it.
Yeah.
But one thing.
Let me just say, I don't think she's offering herself to him just for companionship. There's an ulterior motive. But I did also think that the shadow demon had to come from more than just sex. I thought it had to be, like, perhaps sex with a king. Sex with a king for a purpose, you know. I thought he had to have some intent in that.
Sure. Yeah.
But maybe not. Maybe she can just spawn them whenever she feels like.
Any old sap will do, I guess.
Right, exactly. And given that she's very attractive, she should be able to, like, you know, have three a night, you know, popping up all over the place.
We'll be right back.
Hello, friends. Are you ready to make some unforgettable memories? Well, if so, consider the Marriott Bonvoy program. Discover the perfect destination for your summer getaway and unlock exclusive deals on luxurious accommodations. With our affiliate partnership, you'll enjoy unbeatable savings and a seamless booking experience. Don't let summer slip away. Visit Marriott Bonvoy today and make this vacation season one for the books. Use our Ghosts of Heron Hall affiliate page to check it all out and buy Bonvoy points or give some as a gift. The link to our page is in the show notes. Well, she does give her pitch for believing in R'hllor over the Seven.
I'm already convinced on this one.
I tell you what, in this chapter, and I mean, we've talked about it a lot, but in this chapter, it's very prevalent that Martin, it feels like he deliberately gives examples of how, I don't know, useless, the right word for the Seven. Like they don't ever do anything. She points out that the Seven did nothing for Gunsir Sunglass, who was an incredibly pious man. His sigil is seven pointed stars, and he prayed three times a day. And yet, as she says, when R'hllor reached out and touched him with the flames, he burned screaming.
Can I just leap to the defense of the Seven here? There is a possibility here, of course, that there is no such thing as an interventionist God, that there is no God that intervenes anywhere. It just so happens that those who follow R'hllor also happen to have magic at their disposal because they come from Essos and they have some kind of...
Yeah.
Over there, magic is more prevalent, it seems. And so that's possibly an interpretation, that R'hllor isn't actually stronger than the Seven. He's exactly as aloof as the Seven.
Yep, you could make that argument. You could also make the argument that those who worship the old gods, when we see things like Bran Warging and, you know... some of the other old god attributes, that's children of the forest magic being used.
Right.
So, yeah, you could definitely make that argument. And then she asks, why? And it's a good question. You know, if you really, from her perspective, I think it's a legitimate question. Why, as one who is so easily tells the truth to kings, lies to himself about the Seven? Because he says... She asks, why do you put your faith in the Seven? And he says, because I always have my whole life. And she says, well, that's meaningless. You might as well have just said, because I did it yesterday.
Yeah, she tells him to open his eyes, see the war, not as a war between Lannisters and Baratheons or Starks and Greyjoys, but as part of the great war between the opposites, between darkness and light, ice and fire, love and hate, good and evil, male and female.
And that's what I was talking about when I said the philosophy that she's talking about right there flies exactly in the face of what the Reeds were telling Bran. We just came from Bran chapter, did, right?
Yeah.
Just last
yeah.
chapter?
Yeah.
When they were talking about how they felt things could be opposite forces at once. Ice burns. Mira loves and hates the mountains. So I found it interesting that Martin put these two conflicting views of the world in consecutive chapters like this.
Yeah. I wonder if you quizzed Melisandre on this, she would admit that some of the things she does aren't on the side of light.
You know, burning people alive?
That one. It's always the one. I just
that's
keep
the one.
Coming back to it. I don't know why.
Yeah. It's hard to get past, that's why.
Yeah. I wonder how this goes over with Stannis, with Davos. Because Davos is such a Stannis man that you feel like he doesn't have any thoughts outside this, but Davos has clearly got a big heart and he's clearly a sort of humanist. And hearing this and perhaps believing it, because she's clearly being quite candid with him about her motivations here, down to potentially offending Stannis along the way, might he start to think, you know what, I should support her. Even though she does some horrible things, her ultimate goal is one that I can get behind. And so if he gets out of here, gets back into the good graces of Stannis, that he actually might become an advocate for Melisandre. And is she therefore doing this on purpose just to do that? She actually just making this garbage up. Trying to get Davos on her side.
Right. Yeah, you could definitely see that happening. He does say, well, he doesn't say, he thinks to himself after she leaves that he has seen the power of her god. He doesn't dispute that. He saw the shadow baby born under Storm's End. And he's terrified at the idea. He was relieved a bit to hear that Salador did not rat him out. What was it, the person that betrayed him? But at the same time, it's almost more terrifying to think that this woman can read my thoughts. She knows what's coming. She knows everything I think I'm going to do. She knows I'm already thinking of doing it. Which would be a very tough thing to wrap your head around.
Yeah. So her religion is very sort of dualistic in sort of seeing sort of a god and the devil, so not dissimilar to Christianity, with a bit of magic thrown in.
Right, right, yep.
She talks about this great other as having a soul of ice, and so given that hers is the Lord of Light, we have got this ice and fire thing going again here. And that does sound like it could involve the others, and that certainly gives credence to her story. She's come here at the time when the others are rising north of the wall.
Exactly.
So maybe this is the great battle that is coming. But then you have a question.
Yeah, it's just why are they sitting around on Dragonstone instead of heading north of the wall?
Yeah. So two thoughts there. One is she's come to Dragonstone to find Azor Ahai and take him north of the wall to fight the Great Other. But he needs armies with him. And the way to get the armies was to get him to be king of the Seven Kingdoms. Right. That failed. Now they're licking their wounds and they have to think of something else.
Right, which might have something to do with the waking stone dragons. We'll get to her prophecy here in a few minutes. But maybe that's what they're working on now, is this waking the stone dragons, which is part of what she believes is going to happen. It just, you know, I wondered if maybe Melisandre, could she have possibly steered Stannis toward not taking her to the Blackwater, knowing that he'd lose, so that he'd be less distracted by winning the Iron Throne and more in her debt and willing to focus on the Holy War she's here to fight?
Well, that is interesting. If this genuinely is her motivation, she really might have lost Stannis. Because if he had won that war, there would be kingdom building to do.
Right. He's not going to run off to go fight the Great Other right then.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, that's a good point. But then, by doing this, you've completely denuded him of support, and so it's just him. So you better hope the prophecies are true.
Right. She mentions that she wasn't at the Blackwater because Stannis was surrounded by non-believers, and that his pride was stronger than his faith. And as a quick reminder, Stannis' advisors convinced him that he had the overwhelming force and didn't need her help. And plus, if he had won the throne with her help, it would make him look weak, like he can only win because of her. So that's why he sent her packing back to Dragonstone and went to take King's Landing on his own. And it did not work out well at all. So she seemingly saw or had a prophecy while she was in Ashai. And I'll just basically read the quote. "He is Lord's chosen, the warrior of fire. I have seen him leading the fight against the dark. I have seen it in the flames. When the red star bleeds and the darkness gathers, Azor Ahai shall be born again amidst smoke and salt to wake dragons out of stone. The bleeding star has come and gone, and Dragonstone is the place of smoke and salt. Stannis Baratheon is Azor Ahai reborn."
We'll be right back.
This episode is sponsored by Audible. To get a free audiobook, or two if you're an Amazon Prime member, go to our exclusive URL, audibletrial.com/ghostsharrenhal. You can find the link in our show notes.
Yep, and some of that rings true. Obviously, the bleeding star would be the comet that blazed across the sky and then was immediately forgotten by everybody. The darkness gathering is obviously the coming winter, possibly another long night. The prophecy certainly seems to lead you to Dragonstone. Smoke and salt. Dragons. Carved dragons. It's all true. She made the trek and found Stannis and assumed he must be Azor Ahai. I wonder, though, there are other dragons that have come out of stone in this world just recently. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
The petrified dragon's eggs that became Dany's dragons.
Yeah, would have saved her a lot of travel.
Yeah.
I mean,
and
so...
Do you know where Daenerys Targaryen was born?
On Dragonstone?
She was.
By any chance?
On Dragonstone. So, maybe she got the wrong one.
The thing.
They're dead ringers for each other.
Their haircuts were similar when she came out of the pyre. I mean, clearly, I read the prophecy closely, and she clearly says she saw Stannis leading the fight against the darkness. But I wonder how truthful she's being here, because... Yes, Stannis being on Dragonstone certainly fits the prophecy. But, like you said, there's another option to consider. Dany woke stone dragon eggs from smoke in Drogon's pyre. In Drogo's pyre, which, of course, there was fire there in the pyre, but no salt necessarily. But it also, that happened when the comet first came into view. That was how the book of Game of Thrones ended, was the pyre, the dragons being born, and then the comet in the sky. So, yeah, like you said, Dany was born on Dragonstone. But the prophecy says, when the red star bleeds, Azor Ahai will be born again amid smoke and salt. So, I have seen some arguments that is in reference to Dany being reborn in the flames as the unburnt. And I've seen others suggest that make the case that the salt that's referred to with the smoke and salt is referring to Dany's tears over her loss of Drogo and Rhaego. So,
yeah, but I mean, literally, the words are Azor Ahai shall be born again amidst smoke and salt to wake dragons out of stone. I mean, that is a succinct summary of Daenerys Targaryen's life.
Yes, minus the salt. It's pretty much...
But, I mean, Dragonstone is salty, you know?
Oh, yeah, her being born there. Yes.
Her being born. Because it says, Azor Ahai shall be born again amidst smoke and salt. So that's, to me, is somebody born on Dragonstone shall be born to bring dragons back from stone. And that feels like four square, that's Dany, not Stannis.
Yeah. You certainly make the argument for it, no doubt.
Well, that's where I am.
I am with you. I am with you. And it's worth noting that during a small council meeting when reviewing that letter from Stannis about the Lannister incest that he spread all over the place, it was, I think, Tyrion 3 of A Clash of Kings, Littlefinger mentions that Varys reported years ago that Selyse had taken up with a red priest, which turns out to be a priestess. But so it seems like Melisandre had this prophecy about the red comet quite years before the red comet showed up. So she might be on to something about the prophecy. She just might have gotten a few of the details wrong.
So you mentioned that she saw Davos's purpose in the flames, and that's kind of a relief to Davos because he was afraid that Salador had betrayed him. But Davos did think that maybe Salador had done it to save Davos's life rather than just to betray him. Also, given this ability to see the future, Davos sort of like wonders how she could have let the Blackwater disaster happen to Stannis. I like your idea. I like your idea of, well, now he's going to come back to me and know what I'm the most important thing and do what I say from now on.
Yes. She is now... He's lost his fleet. So his physical weapons have been diminished.
Yeah.
To almost to nothing. All he has left is to rely on her. But That line about, so Sala comes up twice here. We discover that he is some way possibly involved in both Davos and Alistair Florent being imprisoned here as traitors. Davos thinks that it must have been Salador San who sold him out, who you know, betrayed him to Melisandre, and she says, no, it wasn't. I saw it in the flames. And then Alistair Florent says that Salador San told him he had a man that could get a letter to Tywin Lannister. So I'm just wondering if possibly... could he?
Her flames sand? Are actually Salador just being.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, I get you.
You know, maybe it's all smoke and mirrors. Yeah. Or smoke and salt.
Salt? Yeah.
Yes.
So Alistair Florent is dragged to the dungeon by his own brother, Axel. Never a good sign for a faltering insurgency when the families are made to choose between their loyalty to the insurgency and their families.
Right, that's it is not. And he says, Alistair says to Axel, for the love you bear me, please don't do this. And he was referring to brotherly love there.
Yes.
And apparently it wasn't strong enough because he tossed him in that cell.
Yes. Well, what he did is pretty much anathema to Dannis Baratheon, so you might want to distance yourself from him.
Yes.
If he is your brother, you know.
That is true. And Alistair is lord of Brightwater Keep. Just so we know who we're talking about here.
Yeah. And he was newly converted and very devout, pompous about Relor. He was in Stannis' party when he was parleying with Courtney Penrose at Storm's End. And fittingly, Penrose called him a Turncloak right there and then. So he's true to form. He's done it again.
But not according to him, though. Not according to Alistair.
Yes. He maintains that he's loyal. He stuck with Stannis when many others have abandoned him. He has got a point.
He does, absolutely.
Yeah. And even his peace negotiation, according to Davos, is very Lannister-friendly, but I don't think so. Given where Stannis is now, any peace negotiation that leads Stannis Baratheon in one piece is a success for Stannis. Because anything other than his complete destruction is a win. The Lannisters are in complete ascendancy here.
Yes, there's
only the autumn storms are going to save him.
Right, and that would just delay it for a while.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, and you know him sticking with Stannis after the Battle of Blackwater was quite a gamble because of. Brightwater Keep is not far from Highgarden, so, you know, a lot of the other Stormlords and Reachlords surrendered and bent the knee to Joffrey, and he didn't.
We've said this before, that there's a sort of undercurrent of all this, which is the Florents wanting to get the Reach back, right?
We have discussed that.
Basically trying to just, they'll choose a side that isn't the Tyrells in the hope that they'll win and they'll become the Ascendant House in the Reach again, as they used to be before Aegon, I think.
Right, yeah. Well, yeah, they were much higher, much loftier in status than the Tyrells back then. Right. But he speaks his truth on the day of the war. He says, the war was lost that day. Stannis is never going to sit the Iron Throne. The fleet was destroyed, and most of the houses have gone to the Lannisters. And you could certainly make an argument for that line of thinking.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, to anyone who isn't Davos, that's the simple truth of the matter.
Right.
Stannis cannot win from where he currently stands. It's just not possible.
And then Davos thinks that Alistair is a defeated man, and then he remembers Melisandre saying something about embers in ashes igniting great blazes, and he thinks, ah, yes, I see why he's here, because he's given up, and Melisandre's not ready to throw in the towel yet, and Alistair's plans mess with her plans, and he did it without permission, which he would not gotten permission for in the first place.
But I mean, just to summarise what his peace proposal was, it was Stannis bending the knee, apologising for the slander around the incest, but he would retain Dragonstone and Storm's End, the Florence would retain Brightwater Keep, and then to seal all this, Shireen would marry Tommen. I don't see how that's a win for the Lannisters. I really don't. The Lannisters would not draw it up like that.
he would not get, certainly wouldn't get both castles.
Right.
I think Davos's thought is that the Lannisters, through Tommen, will eventually get both castles if Shireen is Stannis's only heir. So it would just be a time thing.
So here's the Lannisters' riposte to that, yeah? Stannis bends the knee, apologizes for the slander. He keeps Dragonstone and Storm's End for now. Shireen marries Tommen, and we castrate Stannis.
So he can't have any more heirs.
That's it. Simple as that.
Simple as that. You're good. Florence Brightwater Keep. Sign on the dotted line.
No, I'm not giving you that one. You take that up with the Tyrells, you know.
Yeah, you know, I found it a little bit surprising that Alistair said that his son, whose name is tough to pronounce, it's like it's A-L-E-K-Y-N-E. Elkine?
I'm not sure. Yeah.
Is safe in Blackwater, Brightwater Keep. But then later he says that he'll pledge his fealty to Joff for the return of Brightwater Keep and its lands and incomes. So he's aware that it's become a spoil of war. So he might want to take up that that his son is safe. Might want to run that by Garland Tyrell, who's the the new Lord of Brightwater Keep.
I will say, though, I think his intent was good. I mean, you're right. I can see why Melisandre might see him as like, you know, we're not giving up, you have. But his intent was good. I would think you could strip him of his Hand of the King without imprisoning him and burning him for this crime. Because this crime is, I mean, yes, as Hand of the King, you really ought to run that kind of thing by the King. But the King's very unapproachable at the moment.
Yes. Yeah, he's out of pocket entirely. Yeah, so
if you don't like what he's doing, then, you know, hey, then take away my handship. But don't burn him. I'd burn him for his comments about losing a trunk of clothes when Davos lost four sons. But his attempts to sue for peace don't seem that big of a crime.
Although Davos points out that it was never going to work in the first place because, first of all, Stannis isn't the kind of guy who's going to admit that he's wrong if he doesn't actually believe that he's wrong. And the even bigger issue is that he's never going to marry Shireen to Tommen if he believes that Tommen is from the same incestual seed that Joffrey is from. And he's probably right. Davos is probably right with that line of thinking there.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, yeah, Stannis might be coerced into telling a lie about Tommen, but he's not going to marry Shireen to him.
Seems very unlikely.
So, Alistair Florent does mention Madness of Stone Dragons, and this is very interesting now, because if you take my interpretation of Melisandre's vision, that the Stone Dragons are, in fact, Daenerys' Stone Dragon's eggs, that she maybe is misunderstanding her own vision here, that she thinks that the statues of the dragons here in Dragonstone might be revivable into real dragons, which seems kind of fanciful. But hey, I've never given birth to a shadow demon, so...
Maybe she knows about these things. There was a tiny bit of foreshadowing back in the prologue of A Clash of Kings when Shireen tells Maester Cressen that she had a bad dream that the dragons of the castle were coming to eat her, and Cressen says, they can't harm you, they're made of stone.
Interesting.
And Melisandre might have been like, well, actually...
Have a drink with me, Cressen.
Yes. And then Alistair says, he's speaking about the madness of the stone dragons, and he said, did we learn nothing from Arian Brightflame, from Summerhall, from the Alchemist, from the Nine Mages? I might have gotten those out of order. I just kind of threw them... I know those were the four he mentioned. I'm not sure I got the order right, but And most of those, we know what he's referring to. We know who Arryon Brightflame is. He was the Targaryen prince who drank wildfire thinking he was going to turn into a dragon by doing so. It was Aegon the Fifth's older brother. And then Summerhall, we've actually talked about Summerhall fairly recently. That was where the tragedy occurred, where it was rumored that Aegon the Fifth tried to use wildfire to hatch eggs, and it turned out, you know, to burn down the castle, and it was caused his death and the death of his heir, Prince Duncan. And then he mentions the alchemists. Now, there's no direct connection that I could find to birthing dragons themselves. Of course, they've been rumored to have been involved at the tragedy at Summerhall. But they did make those fake dragons for Aegon the Fourth that turned out disastrously and burned down a bunch of the, I think it was the Kingswood they burned down. But then I got excited. I thought I had a really great background. I was like, the Nine Mages. Ooh, what are the Nine Mages? And I don't know about them.
And you still
could
don't,
find nothing. I know, I could find nothing. Turned
I could
up
tell.
Zero.
Well,
you know
background?
Me well.
What background do you have for us, Kelly?
So it was a little tough this chapter to find something that we either hadn't already talked about or that there was enough information to go on. So one of the things that Alistair mentions is that Monfred Valerian died on the Blackwater. And it came up when he mentions the fate of the Lords of the Gullet, and who are all those houses are bannermen to the Lord of Dragonstone. So they're all naturally Stannis's bannermen.
Although just in passing, I mean, that's quite a temporary, right? Because I mean, for a long time, they would have been bannermen to Targaryens, really.
Right.
So,
yes.
It's not
yes.
like they're from the Stormlands. I mean, where
right.
the Baratheon connection would be strong. This is a
yes.
much weaker connection. Okay, carry on. Sorry.
Yes. And actually, Alistair mentions that most of the Stormlords had gone over to the Lannisters as well. So just as an aside.
Hey, if you live on the mainland with the Lannisters, you might want to do what they say.
Well, so speaking of Monfred Valerian, anyone who's watched even 10 minutes of House of the Dragon is now quite familiar with House Valerian, as they're heavily featured in the show. The reason is that the Targaryens and the Valerians were once extremely closely linked. It's primarily because both houses' ancestry can be traced back to Old Valyria. In fact, it's said that the Valerians arrived on Driftmark before the Targaryens made their cozy little castle on Dragonstone.
Well, it is warm.
It is warm. Marriages between the two houses were very prevalent throughout the centuries. In fact, Aegon the Conqueror's mother, Valaena, was a Valerian, although she was also half a Targaryen on her mother's side. That's how
Actually.
Closely these houses are linked. The house's seat, House Valerian's seat, is Castle Driftmark, and their sigil is a silver seahorse on sea green, and their words are believed to be the old, the true, the brave.
Very nice.
So, of course, on the House of the Dragon TV show, they changed the seahorse. It is not an actual seahorse. It is a horse with a, I think, a fish tail or something along those lines, if I'm remembering
Wouldn't
correctly.
Wouldn't that make it a seahorse? Isn't that what
it
a seahorse is?
It would make it... They took it... No, maybe they took it a little too literally, the art
literally,
director.
What is a seahorse if not a thing that looks like it's got a horse's head and a fish's tail?
That's what they did.
I'm not joking, McKelly. I think you've misunderstood what a seahorse is. I'm not joking. Seahorse Valerian. I'm looking this up. I'm going to prove you. Oh, I see. Because it's got front hooves. That's
yes.
the difference.
It's got a front horse hooves. With back legs of a fish, right? I'm not looking
right.
at it, you. Are,
yes.
So.
A real seahorse doesn't have front legs. Doesn't
right.
have like, and big metal clanky things on the end of its feet. It doesn't have feet.
Oops.
This is a horse with a fish. But I get it.
Yes.
Okay, comparison with the television show. Davos is in prison, but he is not visited by Melisandre, nor joined by Sir Alistair Florent. Rather, Princess Shireen visits him and brings books. He admits that he cannot read, so she teaches him. they have time on their hands, after all.
They do.
That's what goes on there.
All right.
Pedantry Corner, I don't have anything particularly specific, but I did think Melisandre was particularly forthcoming. Now, I will admit, having talked to you, that I see a way of interpreting her words as not being treasonous towards Stannis. But if I was just passing by, I'd be like, wow.
Wait, what did you say?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I wouldn't, because she's Melisandre. I'd be like, please, right, say whatever you want. I'm terrified of you. That's the only one.
And now, I at first thought, how could she have seen the comet, had this prophecy, and then made it from Ashai all the way to Dragonstone in enough time? And then I realized, oh, wait, no, she saw that prophecy years ago.
The comet was part of her prophecy. And when yes. she saw the comet, she was like, ah, my prophecy is coming true.
Right, yes. So it wasn't a, hey, there's the comet. Uh-oh, I better get to Dragonstone really fast.
Right. News and notes.
News and notes. So Elden Ring, the video game that George Martin worked on the narrative design and world building for, cleaned up at the 40th Golden Joystick Awards ceremony recently. The game won 5 of their 6 nominations, including the top honor, Ultimate Game of the Year. And game director Hidetaka Miyazaki, or something along those lines.
That was perfect.
Okay, good.
Japanese is easy, because it's like Spanish. It's always the same sounds. So it's Hidetaka Miyazaki.
Okay. Well, he specifically thanked Martin during his acceptance speech for the Ultimate Game of the Year award. I like the way I did that.
Our Japanese listeners are welcome to tell me how wrong I was. become a sustainer. Become a Knight of the Realm or a Lord Paragon. You get it all. There's lots of fun content on there, including last week, an outtake, which was, I think it was the funniest, maybe the funniest outtake we've ever had. At least, I think you laughed the hardest at the outtake. You were out of control laughing.
Usually when I'm laughing that hard, it's something that we can't keep.
Yeah.
So it was good to be able to keep that in, and the car out of control story as well was also left in.
It's weird how many stories we've told, and yet there are still ones that we hide. Become a sustainer. Become a Knight of the Realm or a Lord Paragon.
Yeah, and during our sustainer calls, we tell some of those stories that we cannot tell.
Stuff that can't be told. Not on a PG podcast, that's for sure.
No. And also, as I've been mentioning, please view our YouTube content and subscribe to our YouTube channel. That'd be very helpful to us. We would very much appreciate it. And one final thing I want to mention is, as of yesterday, we were the top rated, as far as the amount of ratings, A Song of Ice and Fire podcast on Spotify that I could find. I have them all of our sibling shows listed, and we passed what had been first place. We have now taken the top spot, and just a little icing on the cake, we are 5.0, second place is 4.8, and so on and so forth. So not only are we the highest rated 5.0 show, we are the highest rated altogether. Sure. Most ratings, I should say. Most ratings.
I see.
And one final thing, this week, the Spotify Wrapped statistics have been coming out to everybody. If you're a Spotify member, you get this thing where they tell you like your how many minutes you've listened to this show and your top 5 and stuff. And I have been loving seeing everyone posting with us. A lot of them were the top podcast, and some of them the amount of minutes that they have listened to us for has been
criminal.
Quite, yes. It is fantastic. I've been really enjoying it. And
is that on the Discord server? You're seeing that?
I'm seeing it on the Discord server, but also people have been sending it to our Instagram inbox or sharing it on their stories, and I've been posting it to our Instagram stories. So
awesome.
If you want to do that, I'd be happy to post it to our story.
Awesome. All right, let's conclude. So Davos is alive, and that tends to be the conclusion of Davos chapters, because he's been hanging on for dear life. He's being cared for.
He is, yeah. Maybe like a turkey before Thanksgiving. It's hard to tell.
But hopefully his fate is not going to be that of Lord Sunglass. Melisande seems to be confiding in him rather candidly, rather self-servingly.
Right, it's hard to tell exactly what.
Yeah. But there's definitely verisimilitude to her story. There's definitely.
Ooh, I like that word.
Oh, it's one of my absolute favorites. I think that's the third time I've said it in the history of the podcast. I do say that word. It means the appearance of truthfulness.
Right.
Yeah.
That word is, by that count, it should be right up there with the word interesting.
Interesting.
And good point.
I don't know. The characters, several of the characters don't have verisimilitude. That's the problem.
So right.
This particular story does have it because she's definitely revealing truths about her past. Is she glossing things over to make herself more appealing to Davos? Yeah, almost certainly. But
And
I really like your idea that she intentionally allowed all this to happen to gain more control over Stannis so that she can fulfill what she sees as his prophetic endgame, which is to defeat the Great Other North War.
Right. That's the big battle she's worried about, not necessarily the battle on the Blackwater.
Yeah.
And I've been wondering this whole chapter whether Stannis knows Davos is down here. Is this all Melisandre and Selyse, or is he in on it?
It's really unclear. TV show Stannis could just talk to Shireen, but...
at dinner. Mention it at dinner.
Book Stannis would have to rely on Melisandre, and I don't think she's sharing this particular piece of information. She put Davos there. She's keeping him there as long as she wants.
So if that's the case, then Stannis very well might not know that he's even down there. It's something to think about.
Yeah. While we have hopes for Davos, we're more concerned for Alistair Florent. He's headed for the flames. You don't betray Stannis with notions such as common sense, peace, forgiveness, and expect to walk away in one piece, because that's not Stannis. I like your interpretation that it's more to do with him having given up and not being one of the glowing embers from which a flame could come back.
Right. Like And it seems, based on how this chapter ended, that Davos knows the king much better than his hand seemed to know him, which is kind of the downside when you appoint someone a hand that you just, I mean, he hasn't seen Alistair Florent in quite a while, possibly since his marriage to Selyse.
Right. So, winter weather warning, we're off to visit John next week, where he's forced to part with a loved one. Which, for some reason, it sounds like he's going to lose a finger or something to frostbite.
It's a Davos carryover. You've got Davos on the brain.
So there's three ways that you could help us. You could leave us a review. You could buy some merchandise just in time for the holidays at ghostsofharrenhal.threadless.com. Or you could buy us a cup of Arbor Gold at buymeacoffee.com/ghostsharrenhal. Become a sustainer at the Lord Paramount or Knight of the Realm level at a discount for the rest of the year.
That's right. And as always, of course, you can reach us at ghost.harrenhal@gmail.com, but you can also go out and follow us on Twitter at ghostharrenhal. We are on Facebook, Instagram, Discord, and YouTube.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.